This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. And today we are talking about food inflation. So new data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture shows that we have not spent this much money, this much of our money, on food in 30 years. The trick is that even as overall inflation has gone down, the USDA expects that food prices could go up as much as 3%. This year. And people feel that in their grocery bills, especially people who are already food insecure. So can we do anything about it? We have three guests today to help us think this through. Catherine D'Amato is president of the Greater Boston Food Bank. Doug Rao is founder of the Daily Table and former president of Trader Joe's. He's also on WBUR's board of directors. And Stephanie Tyler Smith is chief of staff at the Somerville-based nonprofit Food for Free. Catherine, welcome back.
Thank you.
Doug, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you.
And Stephanie, good to have you here.
Thank you so much.
It's great to have all three of you. So I want to start, we're going to start in this food and inflation thing, right? So inflation goes up, right? 20 to 23, it's 1.2%, then 4.7%, then 8% comes back down to 4.1%. But food does something a little bit different, Catherine D'Amato. Tell us what's going on.
Sure. Well, you saw that food inflation, highest we've ever seen in 40 years. But what is occurring is that even though there's that deflation occurring, you still might have seller's inflation, which is the folks that are making the food, purchasing the food, passing on expenses. You see expenses rising. You see wages have also risen. So to be able to catch up or keep up is very, it's impossible. We now pay $1.25 or 25% more for the food today than we did pre-pandemic. So this is a real issue facing consumers, and then it pushes those that are struggling even in a more difficult situation to try to make ends meet.
So Doug Rao, I'm going to play a little sound here. This is President Biden now. This is May of 2022 during the height of inflation, right, the inflation rise, talking about the effects of inflation on our economy.
While families struggle to pay their bills, some corporate executives are on earnings calls with investors on Wall Street cheering their record profits and explain how they're using this period of inflation to cover the rise in prices far beyond what they need to do to cover their costs.
And that rings in my ears because in the State of the Union this year, the president once again called out, he focused more on shrinkflation, mostly in the food industry, charging the same for smaller and smaller packages. The idea being that there is a hiding of profit-taking while prices are going up due to inflation. Can you talk a little more about that?
Well, I can. First of all, I think it's a complicated subject. I want to just say that as someone who sat on the other side of the table, it's too easy to point that the problem is simply greedy corporate, that it's a systemic issue. It's everything from wages to supply chain to shrinking competition by having consolidation in industries. It's a lot of stuff. It's the fact that we have the least amount of cattle we've ever had due to drought and everything else, which is driving beef and veal prices up, et cetera. So it's complicated. I will say that there's no question that in this wonderful system of capitalism we have, there's a bunch of capitalism. And what happens is...
Okay, we just got to stop that was and good. Give you a nod on that one, Doug. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, sadly, that's what... You know, there are people that take advantage of it. But I would say that the vast majority of food retailers are dedicated to serving the needs of their customers and aren't just looking at their bottom line, but are indeed trying to be stewards to the community. I mean, most of the people in the food industry I know care about what they do. So what I will say is that, yes, there's been greedflation, I think it's called sometimes, shrinkflation, et cetera, and there are bad actors everywhere in all industries and always. And I think there are some in the food industry, and there's times they take advantage of that. But I don't think that's the heart of what's driving inflation.
So one more piece I want to get in on this piece of it before we really go into food insecurity, how it's affecting people who are most vulnerable or have the least flexibility, right, to absorb increased prices in food. Stephanie, let's talk about how this affects nutrition and healthful eating? One, I honestly don't know if prices go up more for certain kinds of foods than other kinds of foods, other than what Doug just pointed out. You know, if you have fewer cattle, then obviously the price of things like beef and veal are going to go up. I know that eggs have been costly and some dairy has been costly. But is there some relationship between less nutritious and more nutritious food and the cost of food?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we Food for Free does do a lot of direct distribution. And what we've seen so much recently is just as we've needed to buy more food to keep up with the demand, the produce prices just keep going up and up. Just recently, we saw the case of potatoes, which usually is a very staple, secure, like steady price, is up $1 a case. So So that's affecting us on the, in the times that we're purchasing food to distribute, but then the consumers are seeing that as well. For organizations like all of ours that are trying to really increase healthy food access, we see the increased price just in acquiring that. And then the consumers, certainly the people we're serving as they're trying to purchase food when they need to, the produce is just going up and up and up.
Catherine, you were nodding.
Yeah. I mean, the prices have gone up. There's no doubt about it. But there is some, again, decreases occurring. If you take eggs, for example. So, you know, pre-pandemic, you know, Doug, what do we see? Maybe $2, you know, for a dozen eggs. And it went as high as, you know, $8, $9, $10 in some communities. Now it's back down. And it's settling in that $4, $5. Sometimes you get it on sale for $3 and something. But what's occurring there is, as Doug noted, is the complexity, right? There was the avian flu. That was a big factor. There was supply chain.
Because people have to kill
chickens. Correct. So that supply chain was issue. And in Massachusetts, we had the cage-free law. So we had to, you know, deal with that. So
that
in Massachusetts,
well,
that's now leveling. So you're going to see some softening. I see egg prices going down, but the Food for Free buy and the Greater Boston Food buy is just different. We're buying much more, so our pricing can be better. Mm-hmm. But you do see, on average, food going down. But that point you made earlier is where it started, where it went, and now where it is. It didn't go back down, just like probably interest rates. We're not going back to 3%, and we're probably retailers are not going to go back, you know, to the same pricing, and they pass that along.
Yeah, so I really want to have that phrase, they're not going to go back, right? Food's not going to go back to what
food
it
is
cost.
Not going to go back, and there's lots of factors
right
there.
That's really important as we shift the gears now in our conversation, and we're with Catherine D'Amato of the Greater Boston Food Bank, Doug Rao of Daily Table, and Stephanie Tyler Smith of Food for Free, and we've been talking about foodflation, the increasing price of food. Why it's happening, how it relates to inflation is what we've done so far. Now we're going to shift into what it means for people who can afford to bear that increase the least. And I'm going to use a transition here, a little piece of sound from Erin McAleer, who is the CEO. Many of you know her. You may all know her. The CEO of Massachusetts-based Project Bread. So this was last year we were talking to her, and she was talking about how much the COVID pandemic had impacted food insecurity in general.
Going into the pandemic, the supports weren't enough. The systems weren't sufficient. And what the pandemic did was just expose that and exacerbate that. And what we saw was systems and programs were put in place quickly to address the hunger crisis. And now we're seeing them peeled back. But the circumstances haven't changed for people. Inflation has had such a huge effect. The cost of living is really high. Wages are stagnant. So people just aren't making enough to get by. And the food becomes the trade-off that they're making.
So, Doug, food becomes the trade-off that they're making. And food's not going to get cheaper. That is a stunning set of acknowledgments for people for whom food may already be a huge piece of their budget.
Yeah, I mean, data came out just this week that shows that if you're in the bottom 20% economically in America, you're spending 25% of your income. If you're in the top 20%, you're spending 3.5. That is a radical difference. So if you're spending 25% on food now, given what housing is, transportation, utilities, healthcare, et cetera, you realize what a pinch. And we see that in the customers that we serve. And it is extremely tough, because it isn't just that we had the highest rates of food inflation in the last, 40 years. And one of the things we do forget, by the way, is the pandemic socially has ended. Economically, it's continued. And so what's happened is that the impact of rolling back the supports along with food inflation has been a double whammy that has really driven the highest number. And I know Catherine and her team have done great work on this. The highest number of people that are food insecure now, any time, perhaps sure. in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And it's something we just don't talk enough about.
So, Catherine, let's run the numbers.
Yeah,
you guys, your latest report was from 2023.
Right. It's 1 in 3. So pre-pandemic, you had 1 in 7, maybe 1 in 8. And so now we have 1.8 million adults that are seeking food assistance due to food insecurity and making those trade-offs. Why they're coming to places like Food for Free and 500 to 1,000 organizations across our Commonwealth. And, it's all about affordability, and it very much, which is food, as well as housing, daycare, a number of issues that families get squeezed on, and then issues of equity, location of food, access of food, the type of food. So all of those factors play into why, what Doug is doing with his retailer stores is awesome, Daily Table, and what Food for Free as a member agency can do is they're putting more food out, they're trying to help people because they're just not able to make it. One job, two job, three jobs.
So, Stephanie, I'm going to play a little sound for you. 2 years ago, just before Thanksgiving, we spoke with Danette McManus, who's a client and a volunteer, or was at the time with Catholic Charities, with their food pantry doing work with them. And she was talking about her experience with food insecurity.
I thought I was doing everything right. I went to school. I got married. I had my child. I was working. I was successful. I felt successful. I felt like I was contributing, giving back, volunteering. And then things happened. And now it finds me in a position where I have to, basically stretch the dollar as much as I possibly can to do simple things that I used to take, I guess, for granted.
So just want to put that in context. So she's one of the 1.8 million people. And when Doug says 25% of your income, if you're in one of the lower socioeconomic brackets, goes to food. And we already know that in the Commonwealth, if you're in one of the lowest socioeconomic brackets, it could be 50% of your income goes to rent. And my colleague Priyanka Dayal McCluskey just writes a story for WBUR talking about how much health care now costs. I mean, I am feeling frantic sitting on the side of the table about just how much the basics are costing now and the squeeze that puts on people, Stephanie. Mm-hmm. So what do we do?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're doing right now and this awareness is huge. I think what is so important for people to know is that this is affecting just so many people right now who are doing exactly what that clip was talking about, making all the right choices, doing everything they can to set themselves up for success. Food for Free works a lot with community colleges, and the food insecurity in Middlesex Community College is 1 in 3 students, and they had 750 pantry visits just in the first 2 months of their operating this year, because ordinary students literally can't afford to. They're just so scrunched. I mean, you look at the percentages you were just talking about with how much food costs out a percentage of household budget and rent. And then at the end of the day, there's just not money. So people are just so squeezed. We see that across all of our programs, where every single partner, every single program we run has increased need because of this squeeze on very ordinary working adults. If you have kids, I mean, good luck. It's horrible.
So I'm here with Stephanie Tyler Smith of Food for Free, Catherine D'Amato of Greater Boston Food Bank, Doug Rao, founder of Daily Table, also former president of Trader Joe's. And I bring that piece back in because I want to talk about industry a little bit. Doug, here's what's ringing in my ears. So yesterday I'm sitting in the State House. I'm talking with Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey. We're talking about housing. And we are talking about how to make housing more affordable, all the steps that policy can do to make housing more affordable. What are the conversations about making food more affordable? Not more available, not more pantries, which I know can be a lever, but what are the conversations about making food more affordable? What we talk about making healthcare more affordable.
Yeah, And there aren't many conversations going on right now about making food more affordable at a large scale. I think that, and by the way, affordability, thanks for calling that out. Affordability to me is the real food desert. It is why I believe that the Biden administration is starting calling it nutritional insecurity, because it really is about being able to afford the foods you can eat that are healthy for you, that will do you good and won't cause you harm. And so one of the things I will say that the government has done recently that has been incredibly successful is Double Up Food Bucks. And that program, which was a pilot, started, and I think Daily Table was honored to, about 5 years ago or so, be the first retailer here in Boston, along with a couple of the bodegas, to try it. It is demonstrably and proven with research done by Tufts and other postdocs to change the amount of produce that's consumed. Recently, we reduced—
Tell us how it works.
Well, what it works is if you're on SNAP, that you can go in and get fresh fruits and vegetables, and in some instances, frozen fruits and vegetables, at half price. So you pay half the price. In essence, the USDA or other support programs will pick up the other half. And so what it does is it rolls back the economic barrier to fresh fruits and vegetables. And as a result, we've seen in our stores, and this is documented, that from people beforehand that were on SNAP shopping with us to afterwards, that they had a 27% more increase of fresh fruits and vegetables. Recently, we removed the cap. We had up until January a limit of $10 per visit. Was put on us actually by the city of Boston because we were draining all the resources. And we continued with that. And we just said in January, listen, given the economic environment we're in right now and how desperate it is, let's remove the cap. People can spend as much of their SNAP money on fresh fruits and vegetables as they want. Why would we artificially put that? What's happened since January, I just saw the data yesterday, is that our average number of shops have gone up 10%, but the average spend on fresh fruits and vegetables in our store has almost doubled, literally just since January, because we removed an economic barrier. So first thing is, I think that this is, they're discussing the farm bill and everything else, getting Double Up Food Bucks to be a much broader national program will be one of the best things you can do to help people on SNAP.
Catherine, what else? Yeah.
Well, Massachusetts can be a food secure state. There's no doubt about that. And we've all had conversations with legislators in the governor's office, and we're fortunate to have leadership there right now that's attentive. The intersectionality of these issues is very important. They can't be seen as isolated.
Meaning healthcare, housing.
If we feed you enough food, oh, good. Oh, my God, you don't have a place to live. Oh, you have a place to live, but you have no food. And, you know, so they're connected. And the policies that are coming forward, step by step, I feel like they're inch by inch.
Yeah.
You know, getting universal school meals last year, awesome. 13th state in the country to do that. That raises everybody, lifts everybody up, gives families a little bit more money, gives families not to have to worry about where their kids are going to eat during the day if they're in public school. It, as the governor seeks out these various pieces, it's going to matter. We now have a position in Massachusetts Department of Agriculture, first time ever, for a director of food insecurity in the state. Another big step to get state agencies to work together. What I believe is going to be important for us over the next several years as we work is the fight in front of us is fierce. It's big. It's intergalactic. Mm. You've got to do what you can do. But government also has to step up, as do philanthropists. They have to step forward, too, and be a partner in the solution.
Last word to you, Stephanie.
Yeah, I think just the a huge benefit, because the emergency food system is so strained of literally not having enough food to go around. That's what we deal with every day with our partners. But yeah, Massachusetts Emergency Food Assistance Program, increasing that and the funding towards that would help a ton.
All right. Stephanie Tyler Smith of Food for Free, Catherine D'Amato of Greater Boston Food Bank, Doug Rao of Daily Table. Really helpful. Thank you, all three of you, for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.